John Kurtz decided to ditch us today, so it's just Wyatt and I. Mitch Fortner and Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats here for Wildcat Insider. John will be most likely back tomorrow.
If you allow him.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Might need to fine him. Since he's decided to back out on a Monday, wanted an extra long weekend. I don't know why. Wildcat Insider is one of the most fun times of the week, I think. But I guess he wanted to go do other things. Fine, whatever, John. You do what you want to do.
Sure.
All right, Wildcat Insider is back here on News Radio KMAN. We've got a fun hour, too. We're going to talk to the athletic director of the Wildcats, Gene Taylor. He'll be coming up at about 5:25. I threw in at the end here a segment called Ask Wyatt Anything, which is a play on Ask Us Anything, which is what John and I will do at the end of the show sometimes. But I've reached out to Twitter for some random questions for Wyatt Thompson. I haven't checked everything. There might be some weird ones in there, but we'll get to what we get.
Yeah.
How about that?
That sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
But the leadoff here in the second hour is a story of Antonio Gordon. Now, Antonio becomes the first, maybe only, but as of right now, first Wildcat to enter his name in the transfer portal from Bruce Weber's squad. And this comes just a few days after the Wildcats season comes to an end in the Big 12 tournament. So to share a little bit of what Antonio Gordon did at his time here at K-State. 47 games he played in with 21 starts. Now in his 2 years, he averaged about 5 points a game, 4.9 to be exact, 42% from the field. He was 22.2% from three-point range. He hit 18 triples in his career, 4.5 rebounds a game, and about 20 minutes of contest. His numbers were a little bit better in this past year, 12 starts, 6 points, 6 rebounds a game, about 25 minutes a game. So he, as an older guy and more minutes available, he got more of an opportunity to get better and show what he can do. The Baylor game's always going to stick out in my mind, the game here, even though it was not a good day final score-wise, it was a very good game for Antonio Gordon. 23 points in a 169 loss to the second-ranked team in the country, Baylor. But, like I mentioned, Antonio, he announced on Twitter a goodbye and a thank you to the Wildcat Nation, to the coaches. Sounds like a pretty grateful guy for his time here at K-State, but he's decided to move on to other things.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't know that this will be a real big surprise to most Wildcat fans. You and I were talking before the show today. I think some of us expected that this could be a possibility with the way it is now, with basically a year where, you can go virtually anywhere. This is going to happen quite a bit around the country. We've seen a lot of coaches fired today, one or two hired, but I think you're going to see a lot of player movement. How much at K-State? I don't have a real good feel for that, but I think it's obvious that there could be one or two. I don't know that there will be a lot more than that. I've said on this show and in others, I think despite the fact that this team was just 9-20, I do think the chemistry was pretty good in this group. You never really know the underlying reasons for somebody to put their name in the transfer portal. Maybe felt like the role wasn't exactly what he'd hoped for, or it's minutes or whatever the case may be. But you don't want to see guys leave. But if this is what he feels best, and then I guess so be it. I felt like Antonio really came on at the end of the year and played better defense. Certainly rebounded at a much higher level. You mentioned the 23-point game against Baylor. Most people mention that. But he was 9-for-9 from the floor in the game.
Right.
That was pretty impressive, too. And you're right. Ups and downs for a young player in his time here. But when he was right, he's got skills. And really struggled shooting the ball, especially from deep. But I think that was probably frustrating for him, too.
I loved him during that Oklahoma game where I mentioned the first hour he slapped the floor twice after he made a big bucket.
Uh-huh.
He was pretty big in that game for K-State. He was doing a lot of great things down the end of this year. He didn't play in the final three games of the season, so he missed out on the win against Iowa State, missed out on the win against TCU in the Big 12 tournament, and, of course, against Baylor. Now, when it comes to the future of the team, I think that's where we should look at with no longer having Antonio Gordon. Is this a big loss for the team? Personally, I don't think so, because there are other guys on the team that would certainly hurt K-State if they were to leave. And I don't think they're going to leave, but like Nigel Pack, for instance. Obviously, that would be big to lose him. I think he's a little bit more replaceable. It does have to depend on how K-State decides to recruit. Logan Landers coming in. What kind of position will he be in to play one of those spots for K-State as a big? But as Antonio Gordon, averaging 5 points, 5 rebounds a game, I'm going to miss his defense. Offense, he could do some nice things, but replaceable, there's guys that can step in and take those points.
Well, I think the first couple of things you have to look at, and maybe this just was part of his decision, maybe it wasn't. I don't want to speak to that because I really don't know what Tone was thinking at all, necessarily. But I think we all know that Montavious Murphy really had a tough year because he only played in 4 games, missed the rest of the year, had surgeries, now back and starting the rehabilitation process. And I think about the first 10 or 12 games of his freshman year 2 years ago and think about what could he be potentially, right? There's some upside there, certainly. He's a good athlete at 6'8", and so on and so forth. And then the wild card is and the coaches would certainly know more about this young guy than I know, but I only know what I've been told. But Logan Landers, who is coming in, is 6'10 and a 4-man and can shoot it and is a pretty versatile player who can pass and what have you. So did that have something to do with it? I suppose it's a possibility, certainly. Again, looking forward with the team, you wonder – and this is just me wondering out loud, too. I think it's safe to say that Logan Landers will play a role. I think you could probably assume, as of today at least, that Montavious Murphy would have a role. And then what about, this transfer thing is going to go both ways. It is not just a one-way street. You're going to lose one or two or however many you lose, and you may gain one or two because this is such a bizarre year with the one-time transfer. And I think K-State hopes to get some help in the transfer market back the other way.
Well, that's a good point there because it does open up a scholarship. John and I have talked the last couple of weeks. It's been brought up that, boy, K-State really, not only a need, it feels like they have to.
Sure.
They have to go get a transfer. They need a guy that does have experience, that has played at a high level. I'm not talking JUCOs. Right, I'm sorry, but JUCOs just haven't worked out well for K-State for as long as I can remember. And you can even speak of recent times. We've had guys maybe stick around for a year, then leave. David Sloan was a guy that was starting to catch on late and then decides to leave. Antonio Gordon, he's here for 2 years. He's starting to, I think, get better late, and then he decides to leave. We need a guy that has a couple of years' experience. He can score the basketball, even though if he's not as great on defense. We've seen from this young team that Bruce Weber can teach a young guy, or even a guy that maybe not as great as defense on his defensive skills, can get better.
You said a lot there, and I guess I'll just augment your point by saying this, and this is going to be obvious to everybody listening, but this is a team that was challenged a large portion of this year offensively. We're talking about a team that averaged less than 62 points a game, shot just over 41% from the floor, 29.6% from three. So there is a need, whether it's Logan Landers, a transfer, two transfers, whatever it may be, there is a need for somebody who can put the ball in the bucket, regardless of position. I think it's fair to say that.
Well, with the young guys, and I look at the starting five, I think that starting five really started to gel at the end of the year. The bench, though, the bench, even just a guy to come off the bench and be a factor, that would improve this team a lot.
Sure.
Because the majority of the scoring, this would be for any team, obviously, your starters are starting for a reason. They're a group of guys that are going to – you're looking to win games for you. The guys come off the bench as a supporting act. That's their job as well. There's no argument about that. But nobody's coming off the bench right now to be a huge factor for K-State.
Yeah, again – Antonio did not play in the tournament, but I think the tournament is a good point here of what you're trying to say in that when Antonio was not available, okay, and Seldon starts as the four, and you basically play a four-guard lineup, really, your bench in those last couple of games was Casey, Eziegu, Luke Kosuke, and Rudy Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Because Carlton was really not really that available. Siri had become kind of a non-factor. And that's the other thing about into next year. How much of a factor can those guys be if they return? Just because they, for a large part of the year, I mean, Siri never really got his traction, to be honest. And Carlton really honestly didn't either because of back issues early and then a knee problem late. Both of those guys were non-factors. Can they be factors next year? I think that has to go into, you know, what they're looking for in the quote transfer market, so to speak.
Well, I think that might be another argument that fans have had recently, and that is, you know, the guys that are just kind of riding the bench, they're eating scholarships and they're not playing. Siri Lewis would be one of them. Super young guy, I get that. Carlton Lingard is young as well. Mm-hmm. They could. I mean, Lingard, I mean, he can shoot it.
Yes, he can.
He can shoot it. Suri, I honestly couldn't tell you what exactly is holding him back besides he's just not playing, but I couldn't tell you why.
Well,
where's he lacking in the skill department?
He missed. I don't know that he's lacking anything in the skill department. I think what hurt him was that three times he was in contact tracing and missed so much time in the beginning of the year, he really never learned the offense and the defensive schemes like he really needed to know them. And by the time he's starting to pick that up, now you're deep enough into the season, it's hard to get him into that rotation. That's probably the easiest way to explain Siri Lewis.
But I think the fear in there as well is, you know, you have guys like Nigel Shad, like as an example, that he was here for a couple of years, right? But we never saw him. He seemed to be banged up a lot.
He was.
He just wasn't
James
playing.
Love, too.
James Love is a great example of that.
James, really, in all honesty, I thought it stunk what happened to him because the whole time he was here, he was hurt. The whole time. It was just really sad.
All right, we're going to take a timeout. I think he's calling in right now. We have the athletic director of K-State, Gene Taylor. Talk to us on Wildcat Insider next. Wildcat Insider continues here on News Radio KMAN. Mitch Fortner with the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, and we're now joined by the athletics director of K-State, Gene Taylor. Gene, always appreciate you coming on with us. Men's basketball, they finished their season on Thursday, and they get the round one win over TCU in a valiant effort against Baylor. They do lose that game, but just by 6 points after being blown out a couple of times. But, Gene, I'll first ask you just, you know, how encouraged are you about this men's basketball team with the way they finished the season?
Well, I'm very encouraged. You know, I think, you know, you kind of actually talked about it with a couple of people going into the Baylor game. You know, I think we got beat twice against those guys by a margin of almost 40 points. And, you know, obviously the second game, I don't think Nigel Pack played, but, you know, just to see defensively how they played against them and were able to, you know, hang in there through the whole game. And I just kind of continued with some of the games they'd been playing towards the end of the season. So, you know, I appreciated their fight and their effort. And, you know, a lot of teams would have packed it in a long time ago, and then this crew didn't do it. So I was very, very pleased.
We've also seen, Gene, the end of the women's basketball season. I'm curious as to how many times you've been called about the end of the women's loss to West Virginia. That was quite the ending, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was tough. You know, obviously, I think just, you know, you have a lead on a pretty good West Virginia team, and you know, slipped away there. I you know, got to be careful.
Sure.
How I say about the, you know, things that might have been missed at the end. But, yeah, I feel bad for those kids. Again, a group of players and athletes that are playing better at the end of the season and, you know, had a rough go in the middle and then it takes some time off. But, yeah, I mean, you know, they beat a, you know, in West Virginia, obviously they didn't beat them, but they played them well each time they played them and had a really good chance to win it. But, you know, it's tournament time and, you know, sometimes you just gotta, you know, you gotta play all 40 minutes, and get away from them there towards the end.
Unfortunately, a lot of crushing losses for the women's basketball team. Back to the men. So Coach Weber, at the end of the in the press conference after the Baylor loss, he was asked about the rumors of retirement. There was a 24/7 sports reporter for Maryland that had first talked about it on Twitter, and Coach Weber made the joke that he had never heard of him. Be honest, I had never heard of him. He is a verified account. What he knows, I don't know where he got it from, but he put it out there. But my question is to you, Gene, just as coached, had he ever discussed the thought of retirement to you?
No. I saw that too, and I'm like, well, I'm glad a guy in Maryland has a really good pulse on our basketball program. he's never mentioned it to me, and I don't anticipate that to be the case. And you know, I think he's, like I said, I think he's pretty fired up about these guys coming back. If you saw that, I think they did I think we put out on Twitter, you know, kind of his post game speech, and then listened to the players, you know, in their post game presser after the Baylor game, you know, have some pretty lofty goals, so that's a good thing.
Gene, I'll ask you a little bit about, maybe explain to the fans listening how it works when a season ends like this, whether it's the fall, the winter, or the spring. I'm assuming that you sit down with every coach after the season and have an evaluation and just kind of a update of the state of the union of that particular sport. When does that happen for you with these basketball coaches, and what would you say your expectations are after this year for both moving forward?
Yeah, you know, it kind of, what goes in terms of timing, just kind of depends on what else is going on. You know, a lot of times after the season, coaches take some time off and hit the road. You know, typically they're going to go hit the road recruiting. So that's not going to be the case this year. So, you know, we'll sit down with these coaches here probably in the next week or so, maybe 2 weeks at the most. And it's really more of a conversation. Obviously, you know, there is a formal evaluation process, but it's more of a conversation about, you know, let's review the year. You know, what are your expectations as a coach going into next year? Where do you see we need to get better? And, you know, where do we need to improve? What is your, you know, returning squad going to look like? Any concerns with anybody not coming back? I mean, just general kind of, in this case, basketball conversations. And then, you know, I'll lay out, you know, kind of what I'm expecting to, you know, to expectations to be. I'm typically, those are usually pretty in line. As many years as I've done this, I don't know if I've ever had a coach that's way off one direction from what I was thinking. Because, again, you know, you're talking all year long. And, you know, whether it's after a game or during the week of a, you know, break or whatever, you're having conversations with your coaches, your sport administrators are having conversations. So we, you know, probably aren't going to be too far off. And kind of what we felt went on with the year and how they got better during the year, and then kind of laying out the expectations for next year. So, but there's not a definite time frame. It's just like to get it done, you know, when the coaches have had a chance to kind of, you know, decompress a little bit and then sit down and have a good conversation.
K-State Athletic Director Gene Taylor is our guest here on Wildcat Insider. So now that basketball season is wrapped, when it comes to that South Stadium project for Bill Snyder Family Stadium that's also connected to Bramlage, what phase is that in right now?
Well, it's really, you know, kind of, we're about 60 days away from us trying to get an occupancy approval from, you know, I don't know where we get it from, the city, I guess. But so right now they're beginning to really start on some finishes within the Shamrock Zone area. You know, there's a lot of painting going on and some of the finishes being put in there. Now that once volleyball ends their second season, so to speak, we're going to go into the Bramlage portion and starting to tear down the walls on what will be the north side of Bramlage, and start building out kind of the club area that's going to be into Bramlage, a new club area that will be in addition to Bramlage. And then on the north, east and northwest entrances to Bramlage, those will start to take shape here in the next week or so. But we are anticipating to have the folks with offices in there by sometime in June, and then be ready to roll with it completely by August 1st. So it's kind of, I'd say 75% complete at this point.
That's going to be such a great addition, too. Gene, let's transition here to spring football. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to see a lot yet or talk to Coach Kleiman in the most recent days. I was over in the indoor watching them practice earlier this morning. Seems like there's lots of excitement and lots of things going on right now, and we're so looking forward to getting to the end of spring, and because that means fall football is not too far away.
Yeah, you know, I've seen them practice a couple times, and like you probably saw this morning, there's typically a lot of energy in those practices. They're doing what he considers double reps, so they're splitting up the offenses and the defenses so guys can get a lot of reps. And, you know, there's some new faces out there that he's pretty excited about. A couple of transfers he's really excited about. And then just, you know, I think it feels really good to see a pretty veteran quarterback out there working with the younger quarterbacks that we have. So, so far, you know, I think he feels pretty good. The players feel really good that they're actually having a spring ball and, you know, are out there, you know, picking up where they left off. But so many of them just didn't have that phase. And then for, particularly for our new guys, whether it's, the new freshmen or the transfers, having a spring to really get to know their teammates was something that was really missed last year.
I don't want to throw you for a loop here, but I've been asked by a couple of people to ask you about the next round in terms of discussions about the next television deal. How far away is that? Have there been talks towards that end recently? Where is that at?
Yeah, you know, it's mainly coming out of the conference office. You know, Bob has updated us, you know, and I would tell you that it's probably getting closer to where they're actually going to be sitting down and having negotiations or at least conversations with our various TV partners. You know, currently, obviously, we have ESPN and Fox, and, you know, are they going to, you know, see if one of those want to offer up something right out of the gate, or do we put it, so to speak, out on the streets? The presidents actually play a pretty big role in this as well. So, you know, I think it's up in 24. You know, there's a lot of movement going on in the television world with deals being done. So I would say we're pretty close to where we're going to start having more formal conversations with our TV partners to, you know, wrap it up. So we know kind of where we're headed. Well, it'll be done well before the actual end of our current contract, I'm guessing. It's probably going to be pretty clear.
So Wyatt just actually reminded me of a question I was supposed to ask because people have been asking me about it. This might sound crazy, but I think it's kind of an interesting question. So with the we talked about the project that's going on in the south end of Bill Snyder Family Stadium, but also I hope people are noticing because there's a lot of work taking place there on Kimball. Of the new wall that's been going up around the paved parking lots. And I've noticed that one at the end of the drives, you got two tall columns, and then on the top of the columns, there's like this metal grate. I don't even know what you would call it, but it kind of reminds me of medieval times. And, I mean, the bill already looks like a castle in itself there on the west side and on the north side. People have been asking me, will fire be coming out of those columns because it kind of looks like those old medieval lanterns?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think that's what it is what you see. You know, you know, I don't know who's going to go in there and clean up the bird's nest. I guess that get built in there. But, you know, that was all designed with the city. And, you know, I think it's really going to look nice and really be cleaned up. But you notice that the signs into our stadiums with Jack Hartman Drive and some of those are now part of these nice looking columns. You know, it's obviously, you know, certainly taking the time, but at least it's getting done. The bus lane is, you know, finished over there by baseball. So, you know, they'll start continuing to move down college up towards, you know, the foundation in that direction over the next few months. So we're going to see construction on during football season next fall, but I think it's certainly going to add a lot to the look and feel as you pull into, you know, Bill Snyder Family Stadium and this side of campus.
I want to ask you one more, and I know we're still dealing with COVID, but in the grand scheme of things, with the NCAA tournament upon us, we're not talking about very many teams that have issues. Are you surprised by that and how well this has gone under the circumstances?
Yeah, you know, I am. I got a little nervous, you know, in the Duke and the Virginia.
Yep.
And, you know, then KU, I thought, oh boy, let's hope this doesn't run rampant, and knock on wood, it hasn't. I think I saw a tweet or something that 2,100 tests have been administered to those in Indianapolis right now, and all negatives. And you know, so they'll continue to test, obviously, the next several days. And I did see that Gino Ariema from Connecticut was positive, so that's going to put him out.
I hadn't heard that yet.
Yeah, that just came out today. He's going to miss. He's not going to be able to be with the team until the 24th of March. And of course, tonight is the women's announcement of their field of 64. So
right.
That's going to cause them some issues, probably, maybe not. I mean, they're pretty good. So, I think that's what's going to happen now is you're going to see. I hope once they get in the bubble, there's no way they can be exposed. I don't know if some of the Duke player or Virginia player, between their last game and the tournament, maybe went out and saw a friend or whatever, maybe got exposed that way. But I hope once they get to an Indianapolis and they're checking them every day that we get through the tournament. But it's going to look different, feel different, but we've got an in-state March Madness, and that's a good thing.
I'll give you one more before we let you go here, Gene, and that is with the NCAA tournament, even though the Cats aren't in, and are you still able to really take it in and enjoy the tournament being back after we didn't have it last year? Do you also have a pick to who you think might win it?
Yeah, I enjoy, obviously, watching our Big 12 teams, and then I've got, I know I've got friends in the tournament. I know Greg McDermott really well at Creighton, and my future son-in-law graduated from there. So I watch particular teams that I'm familiar with, and I enjoy just watching college basketball. So I'll, probably have it on TV here and, watch it wherever I can. But it feels good to have it back, even though it's not exactly the same. But I'm happy for the kids that are able to participate in it because they didn't get a chance last year. And obviously tonight when we announce the women's tournament field, that'll be a good thing too. So I just excited for the athletes to finally have it. I feel good about our baseball team and our spring sports that are competing again that had that taken away. So, it seems like there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
All right, Gene, I appreciate you calling in and talking with us for a few moments, and enjoy the rest of your week.
All right, take care. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
That is K-State Athletic Director Gene Taylor. When we come back, we'll jump right back into the NCAA tournament. Who from the Big 12 could potentially make the deepest run for the conference? I think there's more than one answer to that. You're listening to Wildcat Insider on KMAN. Letting Randy Rhodes play his guitar there a little bit before I step in and interrupt. You're listening to Wildcat Insider on KMAN. Mitch Fortner with the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson. It is NCAA tournament time. You know what? Actually, I'm going to pull an audible here because I think there's more fitting music for this type of the year. Going to have to call off the Aussie here to play something a little bit more fitting.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
It truly is the most wonderful time of the year, in my opinion. I know this is a Christmas carol, at least it's considered a Christmas carol. This is a March Madness carol, in my opinion.
That's not what I thought you were going to play, by the way.
Did you have some in mind? Or?
I thought you were, truthfully?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to play the CBS.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. That would have been that would have been fair as well. I could have done that, but this song just pops in my head when I think of the most wonderful time of the year. In my opinion, it is March Madness. Seven teams in the Big 12 are in, and here are the teams out of the conference in order they will play and their seeding. Texas Tech is a 6. One seed is Baylor. A 4 seed, Oklahoma State. West Virginia is a 3. KU is also a 3. Oklahoma is an 8, and they're the lowest seed when it comes to the Big 12, and then 3 seed is Texas. And I've seen that some of the experts are saying that Abilene Christian Texas game, don't count off Abilene Christian in that one, even though I think Texas will I don't think they're that much of a dog against a 14 seed in Abilene Christian. I don't know anything about them, but
what would you say? Let me just run this by you.
Go ahead.
And this is just off the cuff. Cuz do you think you would pick more of an upset in a 12 beating a 5 or a 10 beating a 7?
I don't know if I actually even consider a 10 over a 7 that big of an – I don't even think upset when I think – it's like an 8-9 matchup to me. Mm-hmm. I think the teams are somewhat even.
Okay.
But I'm more – I will tell you this. I probably am more to pick a 12 over a 5 because the experts always say you got to pick one because there's always one every year.
Sure. But let's go back with what you said just real briefly, and then we'll get into back to the Big 12 here. I did this today for fun. Here are the 8-9 games. Loyola of Chicago against Georgia Tech in the Midwest, Oklahoma and Mizzou in the West, Carolina and Wisconsin in the South, LSU and St. Bonaventure in the East. Which game of those four are you looking most forward to?
Well, the Bonnie one is actually kind of intriguing.
I think you're right. I agree with that. I don't know... I think Loyola, Georgia, here's the point. I think all of those games could be really good games, and I'm not too sure Oklahoma, Missouri will be the poorest game of the four.
Listen, the whole Loyola, Chicago thing, great. Their run to the Final Four was fantastic. the whole Sister Jean gimmick, I'm over it.
Yeah.
I've had enough of the Ramblers for a lifetime.
Well, part of that was because it involved us.
Sure,
And the heartache of that.
That's the big reason, actually.
Certainly. Yeah. But yeah, you're right, though. Back to the original point, it is an incredible time. This is going to be very different because normally, think about it, we start Wednesday night, full boat Thursday, full boat Friday, Saturday, Sunday. This time it's going to be Thursday night for the four play-in games.
Yep.
And then Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, right?
Friday, Saturday for the first round.
Yes. Yeah.
Starts Friday.
Yeah. So Friday, Saturday, and it's basically a lot of games and those just crammed in there. I mean, the last game is like at 9-something at night.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, they go all day.
Yeah.
And that's the great thing about it. For the first couple of rounds, it is basketball, more than one game on at a time, and it's all day long. That's what makes it one of the most wonderful times of the year.
Sure.
And you know there's going to be some madness. It's not going to be the same like environment like you would like to have at a NCAA tournament game. The place is packed. Both teams have a lot of fans there. You're hearing in buzzer beaters, everything. I love it all.
I looked at, I think I looked at either 7 or 8. I'm going to say it was 8 different projections all the way through the tournament today. Okay. By major college basketball writers. How many of those 8 do you think picked Gonzaga to win it?
All of them.
6.
Oh.
1 picked Illinois.
Okay.
I can't remember who the other one was.
Gonzaga and Illinois is my national championship game.
Really? I mean, if those are high-level teams, man. There's no doubt about that. But I will say this. I don't consider myself an expert on Gonzaga basketball in any way, shape, or form. But everybody says this is Mark Few's best team, and it's not close. If that is so, maybe they will win.
When conference play got underway, I was watching Gonzaga play.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also paying attention to Baylor. And I thought to myself, okay, Gonzaga's number one. I get that. I truly felt in my heart, though, Baylor was the better team. The competition they were playing was better, and Baylor was blowing everybody out. Gonzaga wasn't exactly blowing everybody out. The West Coast Conference isn't as tough, of course,
The
second-best conference in the country in the Big 12.
Yeah. I guess the bottom line is, though, for me, I guess the easiest way to say this is, if you're not thinking Gonzaga, let me throw this your way. Most experts say that they have 4 NBA players on their team. 4! That was quite a few.
So when you look at the field, I have 2 answers that I'm kind of in a tie of who could make the run for the Big 12.
Okay.
Now, 7 teams are in. Now, I'm not saying like everybody's going on a big run because the Big 12 is great. I'm thinking maybe 3, maybe 4 teams could play to the Sweet 16. That I think that's kind of where it peaks when it comes to the Sweet 16. But 2 teams in my mind – I think can make the run for the Big 12. Baylor, obviously. Mm-hmm. Baylor's great still. They're a 2-loss team. They're a number 1 seed. And I think their run to the Sweet 16 isn't quite that difficult, even though Carolina, maybe in the second round, could give them some fits. Because that's why I have Carolina moving on against Wisconsin. But it's Oklahoma State. You have I know they lost the Big 12 championship game in the tournament. after Texas didn't have to play against Kansas. But Oklahoma State, I think, are hitting on all strides at the right time. I like going with the team that's hot, and Oklahoma State is hot. Cade Cunningham is hot, and you don't want to mess with the first overall pick in the NBA draft.
Well, you said a lot there, and Cunningham is such a difference-making player late in the game. What, I think we all watched the Oklahoma State-Texas championship game, and some of the numbers that they showed in the splits of what he was doing in the first half compared to what he was doing in the second half of games, it was like 5 in the first half, 17, almost 18 points a game in just the second half. And he is a shot maker at every level, terrific passer. I think to win at the highest level, I think that's why so many people are picking Gonzaga, because they have Jalen Suggs and they have good big man, and Illinois because they have Coburn and they have DeSumo, and I mean, those are the types of teams that make very, very large runs. I think Oklahoma State, if they shoot the ball well enough, I think could they be a Final Four team? Sure. I don't know why not.
Do you think any Big 12 team could get upset in the first round?
Mm-hmm. I do. And I would tell you that I think most people think that I'm probably going to say Kansas, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would not.
I haven't finished that part of the bracket yet.
Yeah.
But I do have them beating Eastern Washington.
And I also don't think it will be Texas and Abilene Christian, but I could be wrong. My pick would be, and this is a little painful to say, but I'm going to tell you that Morehead State will push West Virginia a little bit.
That was one that was sticking out to me as well.
Yeah.
I didn't have the courage to make that pick, but I thought about it for a while.
Again, if West Virginia plays at its optimum, it won't happen. But if they're off a little bit and Morehead State plays really well, which they're capable of doing, I think that's what you have to be aware of. And that's what, again, be repetitive here, going back to your original statement, the most wonderful time of the year. That's what makes this so much fun, because every now and again you get a, name the team, Northern Iowa, Butler, you know, Loyola. I mean, it happens.
Yeah, who's going to be that 7 or 8 that makes the deep run and screws up everybody's bracket?
Well, let me throw this one at you a little bit. Did you watch the West Coast Conference final with
BYU?
Yeah.
I did not.
They're better than you think they
are. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yep, they could be a bracket buster as well. Some people thought maybe a 6 was a little bit too high for them, but some think that might be right, you know?
Yeah. I just know this. If you're up 12 at halftime on Gonzaga, you're probably okay.
I mean, they had that second half collapse, but there's a moral victory into being up 12 at the half against Gonzaga.
Part of that collapse, though, was I think Gonzaga with about 12 minutes to go saying, okay, we've messed around long enough. Here's my shift from fourth gear to overdrive. Right?
Yeah. They kicked in the four-wheel drive.
Which is what all really good teams do.
Do you have a Final Four? Have you gone that far?
I haven't filled it out all the way, but I am a believer in Gonzaga. I think Illinois is good enough to get there. That's about as far as I've gotten to this particular point.
I'm pretty much the same way. So I'd said earlier, Illinois and Gonzaga is my national championship game.
I
the East
think,
and the South are really hard to pick.
Well, they are hard to pick. And for me, I mean, I've talked about Baylor all year long. But when you look at it, that there's a couple of different teams in there that I think could maybe pose a problem or two. And the obvious one is Ohio State.
I don't like picking like more than one team from the same conference in for a Final Four, but I'm with you. Like Ohio State, I watched that Big Ten championship game. That was a really good game. Ohio State is solid. Illinois is just a little bit better. Would I love to see a rematch of that?
Mm-hmm.
I think I would.
Yeah.
That'd be a great game.
Yeah. And then there are always other deciding factors too, like how far would you pick Villanova now compared to before Connor Gillespie got hurt? It's a monster difference.
Oh, big time.
Hugely different.
Like
Do you have a Cinderella? Like, this is my team?
I don't.
Don't you?
I tend to not pick many upsets.
Right.
Like, I stay away from the Cinderella runs because I've learned in the past, if you try to get a little bit crazy with your bracket, it's going to come back to burn you. I mean, I don't know if you ever do like the bracket pools or anything. You like compete with people on like ESPN.com or something.
I think you'll see most people pick a Loyola or somebody that they're somewhat familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen a lot of, and I get it. I've seen several today write Winthrop.
Okay.
So keep an eye on Winthrop. A lot of people like them.
I've heard the same thing about San Diego State.
Oh.
As a six.
Yeah. Diego State's it's a little different though picking Winthrop because they're way down. They're a 12? I think they're a 12.
If I were to pick I'll look through the list.
San Diego State's won like 14 or 15 in a row. They're pretty good.
If I was to pick a double digit seed, I would have to go with like somebody outside of 11, like 12 or so on. Yeah. Georgetown.
Interesting pick.
They've been good late, right?
Mm-hmm. They've been pretty inconsistent.
Yeah.
But when they're hitting on all cylinders, they're good too. That's what makes this tournament so cool.
I want to squeeze in one question here from Twitter because I thought it was kind of interesting. From Chip Dude MHK.
Yeah.
What's your favorite potato chip?
My favorite potato chip?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know if they're potato chips. I like Cheetos.
Cheetos are awesome.
Yeah.
They're in the category. They come in the same bag. They're in the same aisle. You know?
I like Fritos, too.
Fritos are great.
Yeah.
If you like barbecue chips?
Oh, sure.
Sweet Southern Heat.
Don't I look like I like barbecue chips?
Sweet Southern Heat barbecue chips are money.